Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
To continue in this series really that I'm doing relating to political liberalism and spiritual liberalism and so-called Christian liberalism, I've been focusing most recently on, you know, the 40th anniversary of the Jonestown cult, or Jim Jones cult in Jonestown, the mass suicide, since this is the 40th anniversary in the year 2018. In the new year, of course, it'll be going on 41 years, but there's a big to-do about this since it's the 40th anniversary, and I've been looking at really two different things, current events, if you will. One was an interview I heard on Janet Mefford's program with author Daniel Flynn. He wrote Cult City. And that'll be the second part of the event that we'll look at, because we've been looking at Laura Johnston Cole, who was a speaker, guest speaker at a local university in my hometown that I heard earlier in the year, who was sharing of her experiences as a survivor. In fact, I just want to mention from the local article here, it says it's been almost 40 years since over 900 people died in Guyana after cult leader Jim Jones poisoned them, and one of the survivors will speak here. Laura Johnston Cole says it's important to not forget what led to the tragedy. Critical thinking should never be turned off, because there are people waiting alongside who could take advantage of naivete, and we can never turn off our critical learning and checking out the details. So it's such an important issue today as it was then. And then I put my notes, and yet she is still a liberal who defends aspects of People's Temple. And, you know, People's Temple, is that a socialist sounding name for a church or what? But anyway, as you'll find out later, as I share of her experience, you'll find out that when she talks about using critical thinking and checking out details and everything else, you'll find, though, that she really needs prayer because of her current spiritual status. And I won't spend the time with that now, but we will get into that a little bit later. She says that almost every time she speaks at a university, someone tells her about a recent experience of them getting out of a cult. So the issue is still very much alive. So it's good. Of course, she doesn't want to see people get caught up in cults, and that's great, and that's understandable. But like I say, pray for her. She has need for really a lot more discernment than what she really has. Even though she means well, I would say she really needs some help in that area. Now, I want to mention here, don't want to leave anything out. Here we go, sorry. I meant to ask last week, and we're kind of working on an article that we started last week. I had to leave off in the article, or actually an interview, and it was with Susan Puzio, who has a program on Rapture Ready Radio, one of our colleagues, and she had the opportunity to interview Laura Johnston Cole. And what I meant to ask before I jumped right into that was, or what I wanted to share was, you know, I remember where I was when the news came out about Jonestown. Do you remember where you were? I think it's one of those significant experiences and times that it's sort of like when John F. Kennedy was shot. Again, I know I'm older than a lot of my listeners probably, but I remember where I was when John F. Kennedy was shot. I was in my eighth grade class in grade school, and I remember where I was when Magic Johnson, I'm a basketball fan, I love basketball, and Magic Johnson, when he made his announcement that he was HIV positive. I was actually at a friend's office. He was allowing me to use his copy machine to make copies for my cults ministry research. But that's where I was when that information came out about Magic Johnson. And so also another event that was striking to me that couldn't help but catch my attention was the Jonestown cult suicide that took place with over 900 people. I remember where I was when this news came out because I was working at the newspaper of my local city. I was actually working part-time there. I was a college student at a local Bible college before I moved to South Carolina to Columbia Bible College. And it was a Sunday edition, so it's the big operation, of course, where, you know, all hands on deck, and you know, you're working in the wee hours of the morning of Saturday night, Sunday morning, to get the paper out. And boom, here's this big story that came out about hundreds of people being found dead in Jonestown. I'm like, wow. And of course, I really didn't know anything about Jim Jones at the time, even though I'd been studying cults for years. He wasn't really that famous. He hadn't really been noticed as a cult leader at the time because he was just a popular liberal amongst Democrats in San Francisco and elsewhere. But even that was unknown because he was virtually unknown outside of probably California and San Francisco Democratic politics. But anyway, there it was in the big Sunday edition. It wasn't on the front page, probably because it came in, the story came in a little bit later, but there it was about this horrendous event that had taken place. And, you know, I had been reading the book, The Strategy of Satan by Warren Wiersbe, which I recommend, How to Detect and Defeat Satan. It's an excellent little book. And I had been reading through this from time to time. I looked through it. And around the same time that I was preparing to do this information, I ran across, and this will tell you how old the book is, I found out something he said here. He said, if Satan cannot defeat you by deceiving your mind, he will then try to destroy your body. As the serpent he deceives, as the lion he devours. If we believe his lies, then we will destroy ourselves. And he says, as I write this chapter, authorities are investigating the mass suicide of members of the People's Temple in Guyana. He said over 700 people died because they believed Satan's lies. And he's absolutely correct. The only difference is this information was just coming out and being investigated back when Warren Wiersbe was writing this book. And at that time, only 700 people had died, as though that's not enough, of course. But it turned out eventually more than 900 people died. But I thought that was, I wanted to share that because I had just happened to read that. And no coincidences, I think, sometimes when it comes to providential information or information that I'm putting out on the podcast. So I thought you might find that interesting. That, and this book, like I say, is an excellent book. But it's an older book, but it's still very, very helpful. 1979, it was copyrighted. So sometime around the time that that book came out was the 40-year anniversary, of course. You know, 2018 is 40 years. So it would have been 78, but the book came out apparently a little later. So anyway, like I say, I remember where I was. And it was, you know, nothing really shocked me because at the time I was involved in the Jesus movement. And I had almost been sucked into more than one cult myself. That's why I have this interest in deception and discernment ministry and the cults and the occult and all this weird stuff. But I'm so thankful that God delivered me and has given me the opportunity to share with others and to try to help people to be more discerning and not be naive, as Laura Johnson Cole would put it. But anyway... So I remember where I was. I don't know if you remember where you were, but it's funny to me. Isn't it a little ironic that when this news came out, and it was not good news, but when it came out, I was at a newspaper. So I was right there fresh with the news coming out in the wee hours of the morning. Now, so I want to get back to the notes I was sharing from Susan's interview with Laura Johnson Cole. And I want to find out where I left off here. Yes, I was talking about the origins, really, of Jim Jones. He was from my state of origin, Indiana. He was a Hoosier. And as they say, you know, California is the land of fruits, nuts, and flakes. And a lot of people in California, when people from other places come, they would say, hey, good to have you now. Go back home, you know. And that's probably what they surely would have wanted to say when Jim Jones came from Indiana to land in California. I spent 20 years out there. Nobody told me to go back home, but then I wasn't starting any cults. I was trying to battle the cults. So I don't know. I guess maybe they felt like I was doing a better thing than he was. But anyway, he deceived a lot of people. Of course, no one thought he was leading a cult at the time. But anyway, that's where we left off in the article. I just made some observations from that interview. And I had mentioned that Jones and his wife were the first couple to adopt a black child, being a white couple in the state of Indiana. And that was a feather in their cap, of course, because they, you know, and of course, I don't have any problem with interracial marriage whatsoever. But to people who are progressives or liberals, or back then especially social justice warriors, which really they were in their time, that would have been a real feather in their cap. Wow, we were the first white couple in Indiana to adopt a black child. And of course, as I mentioned last week, he was part of the Disciples of Christ. He was an ordained minister, which of course to this day, Disciples of Christ are a very liberal denomination. So wow, big surprise, huh? She said that Jones became very dramatic and gimmicky. He used a lot of gimmicks in his preaching. He started claiming to have a healing ministry, and people would swear by the healings, she said. Later, towards the end, of course, he began making stuff up and faking healings. I remember, in fact, seeing a documentary where he had like some chicken livers or something hidden up his sleeve and acted like he was extracting cancerous mass from people's bodies and all kinds of strange stuff. Anyway, I was going to say, and I want to say it anyway, I like chicken livers, but I have to admit I almost swore off after that, hearing about that. But anyway, you know me and my strange humor, folks. Anyway, Laura saw, she claims that she saw real healing at the beginning. Of course, I would say it was probably psychosomatic healing, not real, something that the body itself helped produce and then later went away. That's what usually happens when somebody thinks they're seeing real healing, unless the person, you know, is truly being used in a demonic way, like a psychic healer or something along that line, where I do believe there are certain demonic healings that may take place. Now, Guyana was a socialist country at the time, so they allowed Jim Jones in, she said. That's why that was the haven for Jim Jones to want to go there. And the children, his sons, that is, Jimmy and Stephen, they're the living sons who also survived to this day, and they've been seen in the different documentaries as well. Father Divine, she put it, passed his mantle on, really, to Jim Jones, but he never planned to pass his on. In other words, she was making reference to his two sons and the fact that, you know, he never planned to, I'm not saying that he was planning suicide to begin with, although he practiced suicide with his people, doing sort of a revolutionary suicide just in case they were ever in that situation. So he was kind of conditioning his followers just in case they ever needed to all kill themselves. So not exactly a stable kind of guy, to be sure, but Father Divine, he passed his mantle, this man who had influenced Jim Jones, by his own claims to be God, you know, thus Father Divine. Well, Jim Jones picked that idea up, that he was God, but he never planned to pass on the mantle of his leadership, whether they committed suicide or not. Apparently, according to her, he hadn't planned on passing it on to his sons. She says that that is a really big red flag of a cult, according to her, that they have no one to pass on their leadership too, and she may have a point there, like a big red flag of a sociological flag, let's say, of a cult, not so much theological. Although, you know, anyway, the fact that it's all about him, all about the leader, and that he doesn't look to the future for, and I guess the fact that you think you're God, maybe that's part of the reasoning, I don't know. But Leo Ryan was also a congressman that went to Georgetown, of course, was killed. He went there on behalf of his constituency in California, because families were really becoming very concerned about Jones, and he had taken those people over there, so they were concerned. Jones said that you know, that they couldn't come into Jonestown, Leo Ryan and his group, but he finally let them in. She said only about 18 people wanted to leave, but he took it personal. Of course, no telling how many people really wanted to leave, because only 18 had the courage enough to reach out and send a note to Leo Ryan, because, of course, had Jones known anybody was doing that, they knew they would have been in danger, because, of course, he was a violent cult leader. There was custody battles going on, And so anyway, that's the end of that article. But I wanted to share that with you, and I wanted to move on to another article that I got, which is from the BBC concerning, again, Laura Johnson Cole. And we will see how we're doing on the time here. I want to get through this article if possible. And this is Jonestown, Rebuilding My Life After Surviving the Massacre. And I hope you find some of this information interesting at least, but also helpful. This woman survived a cult. She's not a Christian, unfortunately, so pray for her. But she survived a cult. She does have a few things that are worthwhile hearing about. Like I say, I think she's still very naive in her political views, etc. Even her spiritual views, as we'll see, either in this podcast or next week. But this article in the BBC was by Georgiana Renard and Kelly Lee Cooper. Sunday, November 18th, is the 40th anniversary, and this, of course, this article is a little older, 40th anniversary of the notorious Jonestown Massacre, where more than 900 people died at a settlement run by Christian cult leader Jim Jones. And I put a little note there, not a Christian. they, of course, at the BBC wouldn't know the difference, apparently, or at least probably the folks who wrote the article, but it was actually not, he was not obviously a Christian. But claimed people had thought he was. Ahead of the anniversary, one survivor, Laura Johnson Cole, spoke to the BBC about how she narrowly escaped death and how she and others have rebuilt their lives in the decades since. All right. Now, again, by 1970, again, a little of her past history, when she joined the People's Temple at age 22, she had already been tear-gassed protesting against the Vietnam War, worked with the Black Panthers, and attended the famous 1969 Woodstock Festival. She said, my life was in turmoil. I had a failed marriage, and I was looking for a place to be political in a safer environment after a series of bad decisions. And, of course, I would add, I think she's continuing to make bad decisions. But, again, pray for the lady. I'm not trying to bash her. I'm just saying let's learn what we can from her. But that would include staying away from the liberal elements that are still a part of her life, both politically and spiritually, as you'll see later. She attended a few meetings at the group's headquarters in Redwood Valley in Northern California and was soon won over by their ideals of benevolence and racial equality. Jim Jones, a charismatic Christian preacher, let's just omit that, had set up the People's Temple as a racially integrated church group in Indianapolis in 1956 before relocating to California a decade later. Jones spoke of an impending nuclear apocalypse and believed his separatist apostolic socialist community could thrive in the aftermath. Used to have what they called white knights. This is my addition to this article. I'm just making some comments. He used to have what he called white knights, and they were drills where people would drink. They would drink something, and then he'd say, "Oh, you know, you've just drunk poison, you know." And then he'd say, "No, I was just having fun with you, I guess. I don't know." But again, being conditioned for such a time when they actually did drink poison. But the idea was to instill in them this fear of these radical, redneck, right-wing, conservative-type people. But, you know, speaking of a nuclear apocalypse, not a biblical apocalypse, of course, but he was using the fear of a nuclear apocalypse that would come at the hands of these far right-wing political people against his apostolic socialist community. And, of course, he was hoping and planning that they could thrive in the aftermath of this nuclear apocalypse. Sounds a little bit like Charlie Manson. You know, he wanted to start a race war and then take his little group and survive at the end of the race war that was going to end, you know, the war to end all wars, I guess. But anyway, very strange. But it said the group, although religious, was founded on socialist ideals, providing health care and other social services for its diverse members. And of course, it goes right back to the social gospel, which really went way back before Jim Jones. It was the community, she said, I was looking for, Laura said. I was looking for equality and justice. And there were people of all backgrounds and races, Laura says. It says in 1974, the cult leader, this is the article says, the cult leader Jim Jones says he wanted us to find a place away from all the drugs and alcohol in America, she recalls. And I couldn't help but say, laugh out loud. Jim Jones wanting to find a place without drugs. And if you know anything about Jim Jones, you know that he was in a drugged out stupor for the last time of his life. I don't know how long or how long he had gotten into drugs, but he became less and less coherent and more, you know, drugged up as he, I mean, he didn't need drugs to be weird or wicked or evil or controlling, but he added the drugs to the mix. And but of course, that was the claim. Well, I want to get out of all the drugs and alcohol in America, she recalls. We found Guyana in South America, which was the perfect country for us to move to. It was a beautiful country with remote areas that we could populate. In 1977, Laura and hundreds of others uprooted their lives to resettle at the People's Temple Agricultural Project, informally known as Jonestown, after its leader's name. I had no concerns about moving there. I was adventurous, and I was delighted about the opportunity to live in the rainforest, she says. The socialist paradise abroad would allow Jones and his groups to practice their way of life away from the intense media scrutiny that was beginning to amass back in California. Now, to that, I would just say, you know, can anyone say Brigham Young and the Mormons? Because that's exactly what Brigham Young did after Joseph Smith died near Nauvoo, Illinois, in the early foundings, the early history of the Mormon cult. Brigham Young was one of many people who claimed to be the successor, and he became the most popular and the most followed and ultimately the biggest Mormon sect, which some people think the Mormon sect in Utah is the only Mormon church there is, and that, of course, it's not true. They claim they're the true Mormon church, and I don't mean to get off topic except to say that it is relevant that Brigham Young chose to take his followers out to Utah, which, of course, at the time wasn't a state. It was a wilderness. It was the kind of place that nobody really would want to go. But he went because he knew he could be the ruler and the head of the roost there, rule the roost there, as there was no established authority, and that he could continue to practice polygamy, which, of course, was one of the reasons the Mormons were hated because of the immorality. That was one of the things, not to mention all of the heresies that the Mormon Church at that time and to this day still practice and teach. Of course, the Utah Mormons don't practice polygamy, but they believe they will in the next life. So anyway, that's what Jones was doing. He was taking his group so they could practice their way of life away from the intense media scrutiny. Now, Brigham Young was wanting to take the Mormons to Utah where he could practice their way of life, or his way of life of controlling them, just like Jim Jones wanted to do over these people. But that was the line that could have been given to the media or to the followers or to Laura Johnson Cole, was, oh, you know, we want to go where we can practice our way of life away from people, you know. So anyway, it's an amazing analogy. It's an amazing comparison to what Brigham Young did a couple hundred years ago with his cult followers. The settlement in the north of the Guyana was extraordinarily remote, but became plagued by our agricultural deficiency that prevented the group from being self-sufficient. Members lived together in small communal houses and reported working long days in sweltering heat during their increasingly politicized daily lives. All right, the article goes on. My work there was meaningful and fulfilling, she recalls. The people of People's Temple were who I wanted to live my whole life with. They were wonderful people. And I have a note. I think that she's in denial, really, and can't handle the truth. I'm not to say that some of those people weren't wonderful people in the sense that they were sharing a soulish type of love, an emotional type of love for each other and caring for each other because they had this idealism of socialism. But I think that she was a bit blind to some of the stuff with some of the people. But anyway, that's my opinion. It says they were wonderful people. Other survivors might say differently, and I'm sure some do, but for me, I was delighted. It was not an unhappy part of my life. course, you remember, she wasn't thrilled to be with the Black Panthers and some of these other things. So, at the end of October, Laura was asked by Jones to move to Georgetown, the Guyanese capital, which was a 24-hour boat ride away, to work at the church headquarters. She believes her relocation was a calculated move by Jones, brought on because of growing scrutiny, and then the politician that was heading, that was Leo Ryan, heading up an investigatory expedition to the compound after family members expressed concern that loved ones were being held against their will. So the article goes on. We have a little bit more time. I may not make it completely through. and one high-profile case, the defector parents of a child called John Victor Stowen, who Jones claimed he had fathered, publicly battled for custody. And Laura recalls that Jim Jones' state of mind was deteriorating and the Jonestown experiment was beginning to fail. People were accusing Jim Jones of abducting their children, and his secretaries had run away with scandalous information about what was going on. In May 1978, an aide close to Jones, Deborah Layton Blakey, escaped to Georgetown to seek refuge at the American Embassy. She submitted an affidavit which spoke about the tyrannical hold of the messianic Jones, who she said would broadcast ranting sermons on loudspeakers for hours at a time, consumed by conspiracy theories about the U.S. government, defectors, and concerned relatives. Laura recalls, his drug addiction and his personality disorders were getting worse. He was less and less able to function around the time of the impending visit by Leo Ryan. Jim Jones looked at zealots like Laura, people who would speak positively about People's Temple and stack the deck in Georgetown for Congressman Ryan's visit. She says survivors recalled white knight events, and I mentioned that earlier, sometimes weekly, where Jones would declare a crisis about the compound safety. Sometimes these involved mock mass suicides, where there's a red flag for you, where followers, including children, lined up and drank liquid they were told was laced with poison, only to be told it was a test of loyalty, of course preparing them in case of the need for a revolutionary suicide, I would add. When Ryan visited with a delegation in November, he brought along concerned relatives. You know what? I'm going to cut off right there, folks, and we will continue and look at a little bit more of this article next week. God bless you all. I hope you'll join us again.